This morning's scripture reading will be 2 Peter 3, verses 3 through 4. Knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days of scoffers, walking after their own lusts, and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation.
For scoffers will arise who will say, all things continue now, just as they have in the past. I find that a very interesting passage in 2 Peter that Peter mentions, because I think this is a prophecy that has probably only been fully fulfilled in about the last 200 years. The idea that scoffers would arise that say that things continue now, just as they have in the past. In 1785, Scottish geologist James Hutton wrote a book called The Theory of the Earth. And in that book, he laid out and explained what he called the principle of uniformitarianism. That's a really big word. If you're a scientist, we like really big words because that makes us seem smarter than you. What does the principle of uniformitarianism mean? That's going to be my goal. I'm going to try to explain what this is. It's really pretty simple. My grandmother, Mildred, yesterday, in only the way that she could, gave me some constructive criticism. She said, are you going to speak down to earth? I'm not sure how I'm supposed to take that, but I'm going to attempt to do that. I'm going to spend a lot of time explaining this huge big word here up on the wall. Some of the younger people might even know what it is because they would have had to have it on in science. And if they don't remember what it is, then check their grades. So the principle of uniformitarianism, there's a little phrase that is associated with it that actually is the definition that people are usually supposed to kind of put as the answer. And the definition is the present is the key to the past. The present is the key to the past. Now, isn't that what Peter said? Peter said, all things continue now, just as they have in the past. This is exactly what Peter said, that there would be scoffers that would come up with this idea. And the principle of uniformitarianism is the present is the key to the past. Or the way that things continue now, the processes that are occurring that we measure now, the rates of things that we measure, have always been the same. And so we can go in back in time to see how long things have occurred, because we assume that the rates back then would be the same rates that we have now. There's a bigger definition, which means the same thing, but I got it from the Glossary of Geology, which means they want to really make it have a really nice definition. They don't want you to say the present is the key to the past. That's too easy to remember. Here's the definition of uniformitarianism. The fundamental principle or doctrine that geologic processes and natural laws now operating to modify the Earth's crust have acted in the same regular manner and with essentially the same intensity throughout geologic time, and that past geologic events can be explained by phenomena and forces observable today. Does that make sense? What they're saying is that we can observe things today to see how long they take, and then we can extrapolate that back into time to see how long something has taken to happen, or how old something might be, based on observations today. And the reason this was come up with is because there are certain fields of science that don't really fall into the fields of science. And usually in fields of science, we observe things and we try to make deductions of things the way that things are going to happen because we make observations. Well, this particular branch of science, you can't make observations of the past because it's already in the past and we can't see it. So what we do is we still want to be able to say we have observations to make it scientific. So we have this idea of uniformitarianism, which means we observe things today. And we assume that the way they are today is the way they have been in the past. And so we can extrapolate backwards in time. The present processes that we see are uniform. we say, and haven't changed from how they operated in the past. Right now I'm actually speaking about uniform motion in physics. So if I were to present a problem to my students, if I were to say, suppose someone was coming to visit you from 200 miles away, okay? And as they approach you, you go out with a radar gun and you clock them and you see that they're going 50 miles per hour as they're approaching your house. They're going 50 miles per hour. So if I asked you a question on the test, how long did it take them to get from where they were to you? What would you say? 200 miles away, and you clock them as they approach your house at going 50 miles per hour. Okay, so there is no correct answer for that. And I'm hoping that's why no one's answering, not because they can't take 200 divided by 50. A lot of people just want to say 4 hours. Well, if you say 4 hours, what are you doing? Yeah, you're assuming that there was no woman on the trip. Because we'd have to have a lot of stops, right? You're also assuming there's no man on the trip, because they would have went around a long time before they stopped to ask for directions, right? See, I'm an equal opportunity mocker. Okay? So you're making assumptions, and that's my example, if that's what it is. That's the principle of uniformitarianism. Using some present thing that you see, an observation, and taking that observation and then applying it to the past, saying that these processes don't change, have never changed, and so therefore we know that that's the rate, and we can then figure out how long ago something happened, or how old something is. That is the principle of uniformitarianism. The present is the key to the past. Now, originally, the principle of uniformitarianism was basically just for, it started out, because of James Hutton, for geologic processes. For instance, if I measure how long it takes a certain river to cut down through a rock, and I measure that time period, then I can assume that this big, huge canyon over here took a million years based on that observation that I have of this river over here, even though it's not the same river. Okay, I can assume that the processes would be the same. So originally, uniformitarianism had to do with deposition of sediment and erosion of sediment and rock. That was primarily what it was originally started for. However, then, in 1830, British geologist Charles Lyell, who is known for people as being the father of geology, Charles Lyell, wrote a book, Principles of Geology. And basically, that book was like James Hutton's book. He really expounded on this principle of uniformitarianism. And a lot of times, if you ask people, if you even ask geologists who came up with the principle of uniformitarianism, a lot of times they'd say Charles Lyell. That's not true. James Hutton came up with it, but he wasn't a very good writer, actually. Charles Lyell was a good writer, and he wrote this book, and he really expanded on this principle. Of course, then, Charles Lyell was a hero to another man. In 1859, Charles Darwin, very much totally inspired by Charles Lyell's book and the principle of uniformitarianism, wrote his own book called The Origin of Species. And there's a much longer name to that. I won't go into it. Okay? Wrote his own book, The Origin of Species, where he applied uniformitarianism to some other things. Instead of just geologic type of processes, he applied it to biological variation, which means as we see today how things change biologically, different variants of things, that process has always been exactly the same. So what he basically said is, if we measure how fast we are evolving right now, that's how fast things have always evolved. So if you look right now, how fast are you evolving? How fast are you turning into another species? Well, it's pretty slow, right? It's a pretty slow process. So we extrapolate it backwards to figure out how much time we would have to put back in time to get to where we are today. Because I've lived my whole life and I haven't evolved very much. I hope I've gotten a little smarter, but I haven't really changed into like a finch yet. I'm waiting. Okay? So this process is a very slow process as we measure it today. Incredibly slow process. Not even just changing species, but even changing within species is a pretty slow process. So we have to extrapolate backwards to see how long it's taken for us to get to the point we are, and that means we have to throw a whole bunch of time back there. Time, enough time back there that you don't even understand what that means. I mean, millions and millions of years. Think about that. Millions and millions of years. Those are big numbers. We don't really even understand those types of numbers because they are so incredibly large. And so Darwin expounded on this uniformitarianism process about how old then the Earth would have to be, of course, with tying it to evolution. And the problem even with that is eventually you have life coming into existence from no life. So let's measure that process right now. How long does it take for life to just spontaneously generate right now? Well, we have a problem with that because we've tried to do that a lot in the labs. We've never been able to get life to just come out of no life. So that process has taken, really, theoretically, an infinite amount of time. So we would have to then put even more time back in there. Evolutionists will agree, there's not enough time back in there to be able to explain how life comes out of no life, because that process has actually never even occurred. So how, in our lifetimes, that's never occurred. So how are we going to put enough time back in the past to be able to get all the way back to where there was not life? So that's even a worse problem. The principle of uniformitarianism is the backbone of all old Earth theorists. People that believe in the Earth has to be very, very, very old have every explanation of that is based on uniformitarianism. Now, don't get me wrong. I believe the Earth is old. I believe it's about 6,000 years old, and that, people, is old. That is really, really old. Okay? Now, when I'm talking about a old age theorist, I'm talking about people that think that it's 4.6 billion years old. Because we have to throw so much time back there to explain how come the processes today are so slow, that if they're going to be that slow, then we can extrapolate it backwards and figure out how old thing is. So everything that explains how old the universe or the Earth is, age-old theorists, use the principle of uniformitarianism to explain it. And there's a million things, and I could make a talk on each one of them, some of them I have. For instance, the rate of sediment deposition and erosion. How long does it take to lay down layers? Well, if we're measuring it today with just the wind and just normal rivers laying down deposition, then that process takes a long time. And if we're going to use that idea of uniformitarianism, then we're going to say it's a long time for the Grand Canyon to have formed, for all those things to layer down. The rate of evolution we just talked about. How long does it take for us to evolve or species to change? Well, if we're going to take that much time, which is really, really slow, we're going to extrapolate back and we're going to have a really, really long time in the past. The rate of the speed of light. Why is this important? Well, if we know how fast, we can measure in a physics lab today how fast the light is going, how fast light travels, and if we know how far planets are away from us, which is an assumption also, as we get further away, it gets even to be a worse assumption. But if we know how far away they are, then, and we know the speed of light, then we can tell how long it took for that light to get from that object to us. And therefore, if we see something that's burning, we know that it had to take millions of years for that light to come to us. If we know that the speed of light has never changed, we assume that it has always been constant. And the one thing that we know in physics is that the more we look into light, because that's all we ever do, is we study about light. Why? Because the more we study about it, the more we realize we have no clue on what is going on with that thing that was created on the first day of creation. It is an amazing, unbelievably complicated concept. And we have entire laws based on the fact that to say, well, we don't know what kind of a thing it is, so we're going to say it's kind of both, depending on the experiment you do. If you want it to be like this, then you do this experiment. If you want it to be like this, you do this experiment. And to this day, we're still repeating those experiments and trying to figure out what is the speed of light. Is there a speed of light that is exactly the same? Or could it have changed over time? Just recently, there's a new book that talks about the decreasing speed of light. That in the past, it was a much faster speed of light, which might make sense when it talks about God taking the expansion, space, and spreading it out, stretching it forth. These things might come into play. The rate of radioactive decay. How long does it take for carbon-14 to decay into nitrogen-14? Okay? And this whole thing is radioactive carbon dating we've heard of. It's how we age we decide how old the Earth is. And this is the biggest concept that is based on principle of uniformitarianism than anything. Because there's a million things in that thing that you need to make sure that you assume were completely constant. The ratio of carbon-14 and carbon-12 in our atmosphere right now. If we measure it right now, we assume that that ratio has always been the same. Otherwise, we have to completely throw out carbon dating. Has to be the same. There can never have been any influx of either of the carbons ever in our history ever. The amount of cosmic radiation coming from the sun into the atmosphere, that has to remain the same. If that has ever changed, we have to throw out carbon dating. The decay rate from carbon-14 to nitrogen-14, that has to be the same. We measure it now. If it ever is different, then we have to throw out carbon dating. We can't date back any further with those things. Okay? All of those would have to be thrown out because all of that carbon dating is based on the principle of uniformitarianism, that the measured rates that we have right now have always been the same in the past. So what this comes down to in the end is what I call the geologic column decision. The geologic column decision. We have what's called the geologic column. We have clear around the earth, all the way around the earth, even up in the Himalaya Mountains, a huge layers upon layers of sediment all the way around the earth that is full of dead animals, full of fossils. Now, that's been called the geologic column. And we try to divide it up into different layers, and we talk about when this what million years this layer ended and when this one started. And, of course, we don't ever, anywhere on the earth, have that complete geologic column anywhere intact that they show in the textbook. It doesn't exist. There's always some missing layer or something, parts of things that are missing or different things that aren't completely there. Okay? So we have to make a decision. Because these are observations that we see, but we weren't there in the past to observe how these were placed. We basically have across the whole earth a big layered graveyard is what we have. An entire layered graveyard, and we need to figure out how did those things get there. Now 95% of the entire fossil record of all those dead animals are shallow marine life, like shellfish and clams. 95% of all fossils are that type of thing, marine life. Up on the Himalaya Mountains, they are there. We find all of these things. So we have to decide, when we're walking up through the Grand Canyon, are we walking up through, as the government brochure says, that we're walking up through millions and millions of years of geologic time. That's what we're doing. I walk up to this layer here, and now I'm into a completely new era of a million years later. And it's a different time period. Or could I say, you know, this looks like this was a complete disaster, a complete deposition of amazing amounts of sediment killing all of these animals. That's what we have to decide. You have to decide that. Either one you decide is based on faith because it's evidence of things not seen. That's what it is. It's evidence of things that you did not see happen. So you need to make the decision on which one you think is more probable. Could this be, if you had a huge flood, and what would you expect? What would you expect if you had a huge flood over the whole earth? Would you expect a huge amount of deposition with a whole bunch of dead life in it? Is that what you expect? No, I wouldn't expect that. I wouldn't expect that. I don't know what I'd expect, but I wouldn't expect that. I expect that each one of these layers is a million years, and it has all these different fossils in it that existed at one time and then evolved into the next fossil, even though the bottom fossil level right here has trilobites in it, the oldest ancient thing, which is the most complicated form of life we've ever seen. And what's below it? A level called Precambrian rock. And guess what's not in there? Life. No life. We have bedrock, Precambrian rock with no life, and then we have all of this layers of sediment that has full of dead life in it. That's what we have. And we have to make a decision on what's happening here. And you're going to have to be able to explain. If you think that this is layers here that represent millions of years, you're going to have to explain how we can walk up to this and we see a fossilized, upside-down tree that goes up through all of these layers. That's amazing. I want to hear the explanation on that. A tree that grew upside down has all these millions of layers. It's at least a million years old, I mean in age. It lived that long because all these layers deposited around it. Or could it possibly be that there was a huge upheaval in the world and that trees and all kinds of things and animals were all shook up and destroyed and deposited? What is more believable scientifically? What's more believable? These are decisions we have to make on the geologic column. As I said, either one is a statement of faith, evidence of things not seen. In 1990 and 1994, through 1994, 90 to 94, the satellite Magellan made it to Venus and mapped out the entire surface with radar, and they discovered something which just blew their minds away. They discovered that basically everything on Venus is like the same age. Mountains and craters are all the same age. Now, what did they say about that? They said then, well, they're all the same age, which means we're missing 90% of its history. We're missing 90% of its history. It's all the same age. So something happened before to wipe out the history. Why can't you say that there is no history before that? This is as old as it looks. It's as old as it looks. We wiped out 90% of the history, which means there was some huge cataclysmic event that just wiped the surface of Venus all up, and then it started from that point. They're more than willing to explain it with a cataclysmic event on Venus. Now, because the problem is if the way they look is that all the planets could have formed within a several thousand years. They all could have, especially the actual outer Jovian, the gaseous planets, could have. So how do we explain this? We say that it was a cataclysmic event and things were wiped out before that. How come we don't apply the principle of uniformitarianism there? Because we can't. Because there's no life there, right? And there's no theory of evolution there. And therefore, we don't have to explain that the age of Venus as being really old. The only reason we explain the age of the earth as being old is to validate the theory of evolution. If we do not believe in the theory of evolution, there is no evidence. We do not understand the earth to be old. A quote by a NASA scientist. If it were not, and this, he's not validating me here. He's talking about what he believes to be true. If it were not that Darwinian evolution requires that we have vast ages, what he's saying is, if it were not that Darwinian evolution is true, which I know it is, he says, if it were not that Darwinian evolution requires that we have vast ages, many of the Earth features observed by NASA would be considered young, or relatively young, not young, I would add in. Okay? Relatively young. If it were not that Darwinian evolution requires that we have vast ages. The Darwinian evolution theory requires that creation cannot be true. It requires you have to have tons and tons of time. And because we're in that paradigm, because we're set to be in that mindset, then the age of the earth has to be old for that to be true. It has to be. And that's why he's saying there that because we know Darwinian evolution is true, that these features on the earth have to be explained to be old. Although if evolution wasn't true, we'd probably think that it was really relatively young. That's what He says, and that's not what just he says. That's what a lot of people say. There's no real reason to think that it's very old, except for the fact that evolution has to be true. So let's go back to 2 Peter. Ryan read 2 Peter 3, 3 and 4, where Peter introduces this idea that in latter times scoffers would arise that says for this, that all things continue as they were from the beginning. So the scoffers are going to arise that are going to promote this theory of uniformitarianism, that the way things are right now are the way things have always been and the way things will always be in the future. That's what Peter says. Well, what's the next two verses say? 5 and 6. For this they willingly are ignorant of. Willingly ignorant. This is what they're doing. They are willingly ignorant of that by the word of God, the heavens were of old and the earth standing out of the water and in the water, whereby the world that then was being overflowed with water perished. That's what Peter's saying. Peter's saying there's going to be people in the future that are going to say, hey, the way things are right now are the way things always were in the past. They're willingly ignorant is that that's not true. That the world was destroyed and completely shook up. That principle of uniformitarianism doesn't work. It was not true. The world was completely overflowed. The NIV, I think, says deluged and destroyed. Completely shook up. That's what Peter says. The devil through man has created a great deception. A great deception. And broad is the way, and wide is the gate. Right? That leadeth to destruction. And many there be which go in thereat. Many there be which will go in at that gate. And they will follow in there and not take the evidence for what it totally validated with the Bible. This morning I'm going to prove to you that uniformitarianism is a dangerous path. You can't make assumptions. A lot of you probably have made assumptions in the past based on observations that I will probably go over by 10 minutes. I am now going to stop. See what happens when you get into the principle of uniformitarianism? Just because you've seen things happen, you've observed things happen, doesn't mean that it's always going to be like that or that it was that way in the past. More change is coming. More change is coming. Just as it was in the past, where there was a complete change, there was not uniformitarianism. There was complete change with the destruction of the world with water. If we go on to read verse 7, Peter warns about not just the past. You've already forgotten about what happened in the past. You've already tried to pretend that history didn't happen. You tried to make up something brand new that explained, that rewrote what God has told us has happened in the past. Well, guess what? When you do that, you're not going to be prepared for the future. Right? There's another saying, he that forgets history is doomed to repeat it. Well, what do we know about the history? That when sin was in the world, it angered God, and God destroyed the world. Now, what are we going to learn from that? That eventually, it will be destroyed again. Now, it's not going to be destroyed the same way, but it'll be destroyed again. And that's why Peter goes on in the next verse. In the 3 and 4, he explains that there's going to be people that are going to talk about the principle of uniformitarianism. In verse 5 and 6, he says they are willfully ignorant, and they are willfully ignorant of their history, of the past, which they know to be true. And in verse 7 it says, but the heavens and the earth which are now, which are present, by the same word are kept in store, reserved unto fire against the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. There's going to be another major catastrophe, a major upheaval. It's going to be the end of time, and I hope we are ready. There is only one principle of uniformitarianism that we can believe in. There's only one. And that's Jesus Christ. Hebrews 13:8 says, Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. He is our only uniform constant. He is our only uniform constant. And we ask this morning that you place your life in His hands as we stand and sing the invitation song.